more tablets than an intergalactic pharmacological blah blah blah.
That'll be a pharmacological convention.
Oh, I love it. Well, I'm Dr. John Wordsworth.
He's cheeky, isn't he? Doctor. And I'm Rick Timmis.
And I'm Dr. Jackson Matthews. Not a real doctor.
But you can tell. But we can tell you anything, can't we?
Yes, you can. In strict confidence.
Fantastic. Welcome back to another At Random show. We certainly hope you're going to enjoy it. Got some interesting stuff to talk to you about today. Particularly want to feature on one of the things that we talked about last time, because we got some feedback from a few people, Ben and Simon and a few other people that listened to the show. But in particular, one person, Ben, wrote to us about my review of the Motorola Zoom. And he wasn't best pleased, really. I think he felt I would have been a little bit unfair on the iPad, perhaps.
Yeah, I think one thing he picked up on was the way that we said that the iPad doesn't really have use as a phone, whereas in reality, with the use of Skype, you can pretty much integrate phone use from the iPad already, and that's before you think about the upgrades they're going to bring to the iPad 2. So,
which I don't ever like being found to be being wrong, Jack. although it happens occasionally, and when it does happen, I never admit to it. But in light of that, I decided that I'd go out and do a little bit more research, really, and find out a bit more about what was going on in the tablet market space. Now, on the show last time, we said, you know, there was lots of tablets, lots of manufacturers out there that were developing and planning to launch tablets. Well, lo and behold, I've managed to find probably at least 10 different tablets that are available in the market space, covering all different aspects of it. Interestingly, as Ben correctly pointed out, I can't find anybody selling the Motorola Zoom at the moment. I believe it's just about to go on sale in the States, and it's not going to be available here until third quarter in the UK, which, you know, we've got the iPad 2. We can get that in the UK now, can't we?
The iPad 2 is in the next couple of days, yeah.
Next couple of days. So the iPad 2 is indeed, in fact, going to be out before the Motorola Zoom gets over here and is available, because I don't think we're going to see that now until October. However, what did I discover whilst I was out in the marketplace? Well, there is loads of stuff out there that does loads of different things, and depending on what you want, the price point can be varied from anything in and around about £180. So there's a Next tablet PC, which is 10 inches, and you can get that for £180. That uses an early Android OS, and you know, well, you pay your money and you take your choice with that. Through to some of the other tablets like the ViewPad 10 inch and the ViewPad 7 inch. There's two models there. They're around about the £300 mark. The general overview of the market space really was that the iPad was the one to get, but obviously it was quite expensive. You know, I'm working with the iPad operating, the iOS operating system, whereas the others featured predominantly Android, but the Toshiba had a Windows operating system on there, like a mobile edition of Windows 7. I managed to get my hands on a few things while I was out and about as well. I had a really good play around with the Samsung Galaxy Tab. And that's got a really nice form factor. It really does feel, you know, it's nice and light in the hand, you know, and it's got loads of different applications for it, for office, for games, for all kinds of stuff. Interestingly, almost every single place that I'd gone to, there was at least one or sometimes two versions of Angry Birds that people had installed on the demo versions inside the shops. But overall, you know, the market space has got a lot to offer out there, and I think that, you know, if you're thinking about a tablet PC, then it's worthwhile getting some of the magazines like, you know, Computer Shopper or Witch or something like that, and looking at those things, because there's an awful lot of stuff out there, you know, that you can look at.
Did you get a chance to play with the horrific £180 one? I remember just before Christmas, I actually felt a little bit bad, because obviously the iPad was thriving and other companies were rushing to get their tablets out on the market. And I saw a couple of tablets at 180 quid. And when you read the reviews, they were saying how the screen is a little bit floppy because it's not, the construction is that poor, and it runs like a pig. And I thought, I felt a bit bad because all the parents are going to buy these for their kids, and they're going to just be doorstops, essentially. Mm. And the reviews were kind of in the Clone Wars style. You know, they're so bad, it's funny sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I did get a chance to play with, I think it was a ViewSonic, which was at the Maplin store. And in actual fact, the build quality on that felt, you know, pretty good. I mean, yeah, you could argue it was plasticky, but having said that, I'd say that about the Samsung Galaxy Tab as well, which is, you know, 450 quid.
Really?
And that feels plasticky. It's got, you know, it's a shiny plasticky, white plasticky back, plasticky sides, and so on and so forth. You know, it doesn't feel like, obviously the iPad feels like what it is, a big piece of aluminium in your hands, so it has a distinctive feel about it. You know, so the Maplin version, that felt quite good. You know, and utilising it, you know, it seemed to be reasonably responsive, but of course it was using an older version of Android. I think, again, you know, it is buyer beware, because, you know, I have got a copy of the Witch review, you know, from Witch magazine, specifically looking at these tablets, and that particular one you asked about, the 10-inch for 180 quid, that got a really poor review. Most of the problem with that was that it was using a really old version of Android. I think it might have been even a pre-2.0 version. We'd have to look at that to be absolutely sure, but I think that was one of the issues with it. But just because the price is cheap doesn't necessarily mean that the quality's not there, because at PC World they've got their own brand, the Advent, and I think it's the Advent Vega, and that's £250. Now, again, that, yes, it feels slightly plasticky when you touch it, but only as plasticky as the Samsung Galaxy Tab, and it's using the same Android operating system. So, you know, again, I think, you know, don't dismiss these things. I think they are worth trying. Definitely pay some attention to the reviews. Equally, though, I have to say that, you know, obviously being an iPad owner, the only one that I felt was drawing me to think, should I buy this over an iPad, was the Samsung Galaxy Tab. That really did draw me in. I quite liked the feel of it, and the form factor was good. But in the reviews that I researched as well, and in particular the Witch review, so basically the Samsung Galaxy Tab, that got 71%. And the Apple iPad got 76%. The closest competitors then below that was the Dell Streak with 65%, so that was 10% less. The Comtiva N700, 63%. Toshiba Folio, which was at 59%. And then the Novatek N tablet, which was Windows 7, so that was a Windows 7 Home Premium OS on there, that got 41%. The ViewSonic ViewPad 10, that got 41%. Interestingly, that was also reviewed in Linux User and Developer, where, well, the 7-inch version of it, so almost like a Samsung Galaxy Tab equivalent, and that got 4 penguins. So, you know, I guess one could say that that's probably 80%, because there was 5 penguins as possibilities. And yet, in which it only got 41%. So the reviews can vary somewhat as well. The next 10-inch at 180 quid got the Don't Buy award, and that was awarded 29%. You know, so there really is quite a lot of difference, you know, in the field. But it really does look, you know, that the Samsung Galaxy Tab and the iPad are the one to go for. And my experience shopping around the shops and going and looking at these things and talking to people was very much that way. And I almost came out of the O2 shop with a Samsung Galaxy Tab, and it was only the fact that I thought, how am I going to justify to my wife Alison that I've got an iPad and a Samsung Galaxy Tab as well? You know, I'm never going to pull that one off.
Step too far, I think. You've got a really interesting topic lined up next, but I think it would be a bit remiss of us not to at least mention the iPad 2, which is on the way.
Agreed.
I think, obviously, we discussed it a bit last time. No major changes other than the front and back facing camera. The incremental upgrades in speed and things are all quite interesting. And I think the graphics power is going to be really, really interesting to see where the games go with this. Because I've been playing Infinity Blade on my iPad, and the graphics on that, I'd say they compare with the PlayStation 2. So with their new kind of quote of 9 times more powerful graphics, it's quite interesting to think that we were playing, won't be long until we're playing Xbox 360 equivalent games on a tablet lying back in bed. You know, that's quite, not that we're there yet, but you know, in a couple of years' time, it won't be far off.
It's where we'll all be in bed playing on our
tablets. iPads.
That's the dream.
I like the new cover they've got for it, though.
The smart cover.
That was really
great.
Yeah.
It interacts with the device.
And it's magnetic as well, and so it sticks onto the, you know, I mean, I'm not, in my book, I always thought aluminium was not magnetic. but, you know, so they've obviously done something there to solve that. But also when you open the cover, it switches on and off, which is clever.
Yeah.
And then they've thought it out really carefully about how you can fold it because of the way it's been modelled to stand the iPad up in different ways so you can view things in different ways. And I think that comes... I know you can buy the different colours, but you get one as standard with this new iPad. I think so.
Ah.
If I understood the video correctly, you get one as part of the package. But
cool.
You can choose, you know, what it is that you want. So that was a useful, you know, very much a useful tool.
Really,
well.
Really quickly before we move on, I know that time is ticking along, but did you hear the sales figure? They said they've sold 15 million iPads now in the last 9 months.
That is unbelievable, 15 million.
And there's something crazy, like, in the last 9 months, they've sold more iPads than all the other tablet devices sold ever, added up.
That's incredible, isn't it? we ought to do a section, we ought to look at that in this show, actually, at some point, and see how Apple have done that from its... You know, from a few years back when its position was really actually quite untenable, probably, you know, in the sort of late 90s. And then over the last decade, you know, particularly under the drive of Steve Jobs as well, but they've brought themselves to, you know, to one of the most dominant companies. And I think financially, one of the most powerful companies on the planet, you know, in such a short period of time. It's quite amazing how they've been able to do that. Based around really polishing, in you know, getting innovation right by innovating for the end for the majority end user and mass market. Moving on from that, though, and these things link together relatively well. What about Linux on the tablet? You know, at CES in when they were there, Ubuntu were there. The team at Canonical were there. You know, so what do we think, guys, about the open source community and the Linux operating system? Do we think that can gain traction?
I think the biggest problem they're going to have is that in order for them to gain traction, they're going to need to be picked up by a device developer, aren't they? In the sense that with PCs, you can buy the components for a PC, put it all together. And then at the end of a day's work, you've got a PC, and then you can say, right, now do I want to buy Windows or download Linux for free?
Mm.
So you make that choice of what software you're going to put on your hardware, whereas with a tablet, you're never going to buy a tablet without an OS and then put one on there. You're going to get it delivered with an OS. And in order for Linux to get a foothold in that platform, it's going to have to come delivered on tablets, isn't it?
So they need to start thinking about binding with some of the manufacturers then. And of course, Google have done that with the Android platform. Mm. They've made that available, and they've got a broad swathe of manufacturers now that are releasing, obviously, Android on both on mobile phones and, of course, on tablets. Microsoft have used that strategy for years because, again, they're purely and simply a software development team. But they have locked down the hardware market by getting out there and negotiating OEM licensing deals with all of those vendors. So the problem being a software vendor is getting picked up with the hardware manufacturers. But of course, the price point on Ubuntu is it's a free operating system, very much like Android is. So does that mean that that the device manufacturers will look at that platform? You know, and the possibilities that it has to take. So in some way, in my mind, that sort of starts to think, okay, well, actually, the argument now becomes Android or Linux, Ubuntu, or one of the Linux distros, and where that goes from there. I know certainly that I have, you know, I know Chris Kenyon from Canonical, and I've known him for a few years. And years ago, even 4 or 5 years ago, Canonical, even then at the board table, had a strategy for mobile devices. They understood that the mobile device was the device space that they needed to work towards. Obviously, the gaining footprint with desktop users and with the open source community, and it's now the most popular distro that's out there for, you know, distributions of Linux. But they also have developed the netbook remixes, which is designed to offer power for those smaller devices. And I know that they also compile on the ARM architecture, which means that many of those tablet devices, there are all is already cross-compiled to go on there. And in the next releases of release 11, I think it's going to be, they're introducing the Unity desktop, which is very much more a kind of almost like a blocky kind of app point and click sort of interface. So for me, for my money, I think that they're definitely creating an operating system that is out there in the market space and that could be picked up by a manufacturer. I think they've got to get that get that connection with the device manufacturers to be able to do that. And then whether the open source community can gain enough space. Yeah, there are lots and lots of applications there in the open source world, but you know, Android, I don't know what's in the App Store for the moment for Android, but for Apple App Store's over 100,000 apps when they launched it. There's tens, probably hundreds of thousands of apps in the Android store. So there's a lot of catching up to do for that to happen.
I do think that possibly Android is the biggest problem for Linux taking this market space. I think if you're a hardware developer and you're looking for free OS to put on your device, you'll probably hit Android and think, Android, 100,000 apps in the marketplace, or this new Linux. You know, like Android's already going to be established by the time that Linux is a viable tablet operating system. And that's going to be the biggest problem, I think, if Linux wants to penetrate this market. Not saying that it can't happen, because all crazy sorts of stuff happens in the tech world. But they would need to find some serious partnership in order for it to happen. Maybe work with Dell or someone, you know, someone who's making tablets. They'd have to make that link, I think, because they'd need to find the hardware before the software really gets properly made for a tablet. Because the problem at the moment is you'll have Linux on there, great, but obviously all the apps for Linux, they'll work, but they won't give you a nice tablet experience. If you're trying to use
GIMP, they're not optimized on a tablet, for that interface.
You're not going to be able to in many cases, because a lot of them require you to right-click on certain tiny icons, and that just isn't going to be possible on a tablet at the moment. So a lot of the software developers are going to have to develop tablet versions of their apps before it can go onto a tablet, before they can convince the hardware manufacturer that there's a reason to choose Linux over Android.
You don't think they've moved far enough in that direction to begin with? They need to prove themselves a bit more before they can get any traction.
The problem is that Android is already free. If there wasn't, like with netbooks, Linux had a really good start, and then until Microsoft came along and made the sort of reduced cost for XP, as long as you met the sort of hardware requirements. And then at which point Linux kind of started dropping off on netbooks because everyone could afford to buy Windows. But now if you're a cheap-ass tablet developer and you don't want to pay for your OS, you're going to just look at Android and go, well, it's worked for Galaxy Tab, you know, and that's like the second best tablet. And it's free. So.
Which is a great strategic move by Google, of course. Because of course they put their platform out there free and available for all of the different manufacturers, and they, you know, effectively gives them this just tremendous market position. And again, it's difficult to see how the Linux and the open source community it's been working really hard pursuing the desktop and the PC experience, and it's still, you know, pretty much kind of, well, you know, maybe a second or it's viable second or third player in that space. And, you know, we could talk about that, probably will a little bit later on in this show, about the different operating systems. But it's been struggling to find its corner there. Mm-hmm. And this is a completely new paradigm in the market space. Does it have the energy, the resources, a community to shift and tackle that as well? Difficult one, isn't it, you know? And as you rightly say, you know, the apps that are already out there are desktop orientated, and there is no development mechanism for the kind of app store that's available, and so on and so forth. And there's no point in creating a kind of almost like an Android clone, because of course Android is already running on Linux in a Java VM. So in some ways, you know, the horse has bolted, which is the difficulty. There's lots of angles on this particular story, though, and loads of different viewpoints of it. It's gonna be a hot topic to go for a long time. My gut feeling, I think that we probably will see in the next 12 to 18 months, we'll see some of the manufacturers come out, and I'm absolutely and utterly sure that we're going to see an ARM-based device come out onto the market space that will be running Ubuntu. Now, that might not be a tablet, that might be a PC or an ARM-based netbook or something like that, that's really low power, you know, lots of performance out there. We're certainly going to see something like that, and I think that it'll do very well in the market space because its price point will be strong. I think I would say, you know, take a look at the links, you know, bit of feedback. People could get back in touch with us and let us know what they think about that particular debate.
Definitely. Now, we've had a call from someone.
We have, yeah. You sent about our listener feedback, and we've had our very first genuine voicemail. So, any chance we can play that back, let them hear it.
Hiya, it's Jerry, your Manx techie here. Hey, John, Rick, Jack, how's it going, yeah? All right. I'll tell you what, I've had a totally mad week, I have, yeah? Oh, it's been totally mad, yeah. I've been out, I was out of Salford, actually, Salford Quays, up in the offices there, working on some big IBM stuff, like, you know the AS400s with, with Unix boxes, like. And, I'll tell you what, guys, I've had such a rocking week, I've got to tell you. I was working with it, just problems, you know what I mean, with the SAN and the NAS architectures, basically just trying to get the data over the fibre channel. And I was totally twisting me melon, man. I could not sort it out at all. Seems like, apparently, like they've got this clustered database running on Oracle DB. And obviously the supporting application, which is obviously, you know, underpinned by IBM's middleware, I was just slow as a dog, like, you know what I mean? It just wasn't working right at all. And anyway, it turns out that, like, what was going on was that one of the interface cards was, like, hanging an interrupt switch permanently. So instead of the data coming rocking over the fiber channel, being normally multiplexed, as you would expect it to be, like, it just wasn't, like... So it was going dead slow, but because it was working and you could actually find the data, you could see data coming through, you know, and get it through to the database. But the problem was that it weren't really... It just weren't performing right. Anyway, it was all resting on me, Jerry, Manx Techie, to sort it out, like. And I tell you what, it took me hours, absolutely hours. It was totally nipping me Swede, mate, absolutely nipping it. And by the time I got it sorted anyway, it was dead straightforward. All we needed to do was just swap out the fibre channel boards into the NAS box, and hey presto, it was all up and running again. So, you know, took me a couple of days to sort that out and iron it out, like. And, you know, so an interesting problem taken on just goes to show you that sometimes just a simple piece of hardware can cause you the weirdest problems. And because it's hardware, you normally expect it to either work or it don't. But if you get something like an IRQ channel just goes down on a card or something like that, bang, all of a sudden you've got massive performance degradation, tons of problems going on, but you can't exactly identify exactly what it is that's causing the problem. Anyway, all sorted, that's my report for this week. You boys have a great At Random show, and I'll catch you soon. Cheers, lads.
Oh, well, thank you, Jerry. That was great.
he's mad.
I do like Jerry. I hope we hear from him again. I'd hate to think that was the last.
Right, I think it would be a good time now to start having a quick look at some of the apps we've downloaded over the last few weeks. Jackson?
Yeah,
You've got something entertaining to kick off with.
Well, this one's quite... this struck me as a kind of unique theme for this game I'm going to show you. This is something called Babel Rising, which you may or may not have heard of. It's, quite a few people don't seem to, so it seems a good one to kick off with. If I start this up... Here we go, and it's coming out. Bulky Picks. and right off you can see like the kind of like musty graphics coming in.
White
when this comes up,
Productions.
Yeah, that's it. When this comes in, you'll be able to see the theme in full swing. But it's quite it's quite an original idea, I think. That's very well realised. I mean, it's essentially a tower defence game in spirit anyway.
Right.
But in actual fact, what you're trying to do is you basically play the part of God. And you're up in the sky, and the little guy is coming along the bottom of the screen. They're trying to put together the Tower of Babel, and they're trying to build it up to reach heaven, like in the story.
Ah, okay.
And so, if I start this up a second, your goal is basically to stop them from doing that, because these punks, they're getting ahead of themselves, and they've got basically no business building towers up to the sky. So what you've got to do is you've got to put them in their place, and this is where the fun comes in. So if I start up a game here, got all the lovely menus and everything.
I love the graphics in this already, just that kind of very oldy, antique-y kind of sort of illustrated.
It looks like the illustrated Bible, doesn't it?
It does.
If you had like a picture version, that the theme in this is very, very tight, and this is running all the way throughout all of the graphics. The loading times are a little bit lengthy bits. All right, and here we go, and as you can see, you've got the eye of God up here in the sky with the clouds moving and everything. And down here comes our first guys with the blocks, and if we tap on him...
They look like little Egyptians in their little togas.
yeah, exactly. And you basically tap on those to crush them and stop them from building blocks. If you can't get them fast enough, they'll start building the blocks and the tower will start moving up. But that's not all you can do, because you have up here you've got like different powers, like different like godly powers that you can... If I do my lightning bolt here... electrify this guy, he turns into the sky.
That's awesome power.
Warner Brothers and stuff. But it's so many more. We have the wind gust, which you do all these with different gestures with your finger. So if I do the wind gust, everybody flies and goes.
Wow, that's really cool. I like the lightning bolt. That was really good.
Obviously, the more powerful plagues that you can send on people, they take more time to charge up. But when they do, we get tidal waves here. We've got the... Here we go. There's the meteor shower.
It's really nice because it really plays on that tactile... thing that you can do with a touch phone nowadays.
Yeah,
it does. It's
not just a gimmick. It actually is a core mechanic.
It is, and it's just massive fun to see people go flying head over heels when you give them the wind gust. There's the earthquake, which is going to take forever to charge up. But once it does, you just shake the phone, and then it basically just lays waste to all these little heretics.
And shaking it does some damage to the tower as well. One would hope.
You'd think so, but it doesn't actually damage the tower. However, you can damage a floor of the tower every so often. God's eye will open up wide, and then you basically just touch the eye, and then a laser beam will come from the sky and demolish the top tower. It's a wonder these guys managed to build anything, but somehow, eventually...
But they're persistent little devils, aren't they? They don't give up.
That's the thing.
I loathe them.
God bless them. See if I just give them a few lightning bolts there. But anyway, that's the gist of it. Basically, you just keep hammering and hammering them until they eventually build the tower up to the...
You can squeeze them as well by tap, multi-tapping like this.
The tapping of the guys is the bread and butter of your powers, basically.
That's kind of the... That you need to be fairly consistent with that, because these guys are coming from anywhere, and then you can just go let them... That's awesome! I love this!
It's all very satisfying. Very satisfying. And it's just a gorgeous-looking game, aside from all else. And this theme is really tight.
So what is that called again?
This is Babel Rising.
And how much will it set you back?
This one, I believe, is $159, but I could be wrong in that. I think I actually got it on the free app of the day, so it's worth checking back there in case it comes back there again. But definitely one to own, whether paid or for free.
Cool.
Yeah, I like it.
Oh, and there we go. God's eyes open up. Tap that. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Boom, a whole level gone.
Yeah, God lays the smack down.
That looks like loads of just plain, simple enjoyment. Real good fun.
It is. Yeah, it's a real beauty.
Cool. Well, I'm going to cheat a tiny bit this week, because I actually want to mention two apps. So I'm going to mention a runner-up app first, which is 50-in-1 Piano HD. I almost didn't mention it because of the lengthy title. But
it took too long to say. It's taken us longer to talk about how long the name was.
The tongue twister element of the title. But so 50-in-1 Piano HD is essentially kind of another piano app. There's a few of them out on the iPad, which basically turns the surface of your iPad screen into a piano. But what I really like about it, and what actually inspired me to go ahead and buy it, as opposed to just sort of play with it for a few minutes and get bored, which is, it comes pre-installed with, I think it's 120 different lessons, which kind of turns it into Piano Hero.
It looked like that, didn't it?
So the notes will come down the screen and give you a little bit of chance to prepare, and then you get to play it on the fairly... There's quite a few keys on the screen at once, because you can fit quite a few on an iPad and still manage to mash them with your fingers. So you get a decent length of piano, and then you get to kind of basically play Guitar Hero, but with a piano on the iPad. So while it isn't a game per se, it's a lot of fun. But the one I really wanted to mention was an app that's a little bit pricey. It's $5.99, called Air Display, and that essentially turns your iPad or your iPhone... It's a universal app, so in theory you can run it on both at once, but it turns your iOS device into an external monitor.
Impossible. Surely this cannot be done.
So you can, at the moment it doesn't support Linux, but you can connect.
That's outrageous.
I think they're working on a driver, but
are they?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be cool, because it looks awesome as a, you know, as a kind of tool, from what I saw earlier on when you were demoing it.
Yeah. So essentially, I mean, you can install the driver on Windows or on OS X at the moment, and it literally just, you run the app on your iPad, sit it next to your monitor, and it becomes a second monitor over the Wi-Fi network. So, I mean, it's really cool. It's very useful, and it's pretty good. Those are my sort of summary. It's really cool because extra monitor, if you've got your laptop somewhere and you're at a friend's house or you're working out of the office and you want a second monitor just to put up a web page of information, because I find it really useful to have documentation on my second monitor, which doesn't have to have a great frame rate or responsiveness. Once you put something there, you can get back to work. So for that, it scores, you know, it's well worth the $5.99. It does come with a couple of problems. It's got that kind of remote desktop feel to it. So when you put your mouse on the screen, the frame rate drops a little bit, which you'd expect over Wi-Fi, maybe not over a local network, but I know that my internal network's a bit flaky at times. But yeah, so you do get that kind of drop frame rate, and sometimes it hangs for a couple of seconds when you're in the middle of moving the mouse.
But by and large, with a decent connection, you're talking something pretty solid, well, as solid as any VNC connection.
Yeah, it's no different to remote desktoping, but it's you know, it's really useful, and it's really natty in certain respects as well. So if you turn it 90 degrees, that after a split second of flickering, the monitor will now be portrait instead of landscape. And then you can also use it as a touchscreen. And when you tap on the iPad screen, the mouse cursor moves to where your finger is, which is pretty cool. Maybe not that useful, but cool. So definitely one to look out for. That's Air Display, and that's available for $5.99 as a universal app now on the App Store.
I mean, in that demo that you did, you know, prior to starting the show, obviously you've already got two screens here on the desktop, so, you know, with three screens running up there, but it did work really quite smoothly, and you were able to put that, you know, the little music playing app on there. And you are right, it is very much kind of like an RDP experience, almost like the remote desktop. But, you know, you were able to click the screen to play those tracks and so on and so forth. And I can just see a whole host of uses. And in my current role at my new desk, in my new office, which I've just recently started, I've got two monitors, and I have the iPad standing in one of its little keyboard stand on the left there. So there's actually three there. Only problem is that my work machine is a Linux machine. It's a Linux desktop. So until that driver comes out, I can't utilize it. But I would definitely get a copy of it, because, as you say, just for having been able to have, you know, documentation up there, Linux root user guide or a PHP reference or whatever, just sitting there, not taking up screen real estate, but it's still there for me to use. That, for me, that really appealed to me in that app. So I'll definitely be buying it if they can get a Linux driver finished for it.
Cool. So, little hint there for the developers if you're listening, and that was Air Display on the App Store. So.
Yeah, fantastic.
So what have you got then, Rick?
Something completely different, and, you know, not business orientated for me for a change. I'm not totally boring, you know. I'm not always about office apps and, you know, the latest, you know, thing, you know, the latest thing that you can use in your business. In my spare time, which I don't have a great deal of, but I do play the guitar, and I've done for many years. And when I was recently in the Apple Store, I saw an iRig, this, you know, little iRig device that effectively allows you to connect into the top of your iPhone or your iPad, And it basically provides a little extension with a large jack socket on it and an external 3.5-inch jack for headphones. Into the single mono jack socket, you can plug your guitar via its guitar lead. And then out, you can put your headphones. So basically now, without any requirement for any amp or anything like that, you can just get your guitar, your electric guitar, plug it straight into the iPhone, and you've got an amplifier, which in the first instance is really cool. So I'll just fire it up here so you can have a see, and it shows you there. So that's the little iRig device, and you can see the large jack socket and the normal iPhone headphones plugging in there. But what's really interesting about it is that it also provides a whole series of effects pedals, different things that you can play. So you can see here, like, that basically you, in a traditional guitar environment, for those of you who haven't played the guitar before, what you would normally do with traditional analog effects to get all those kinds of deep, heavy, distorted sounds or echoes and so on and so forth, you buy a whole series of effects pedals and you plug them together with little patch cables, and then you have pedals on there that allow you to switch them on and on in the loop, so the different effects that you want. This Amplitude app works in exactly the same way. So you can see here I've got like pedal, I've got the first setup, which is about the guitar, then I've got pedal 1, pedal 2, 3 and 4, and then I can select what that pedal's going to be. So in pedal 1 I've got a noise filter, pedal 2 I've got overdrive for creating a bit of distortion, in pedal 3 I've got a full distortion sound for that metal kind of sound that you might want, and then I've got the amp that I can choose, and that could be a Marshall amp or a Mesa Boogie or whatever I want to do. So I can set that whole rig up, and then I can effectively just click on the on-off button here like this to just switch the pedals on and off, put them into the line. So that in itself is really cool. So now you can plug this in and jam away your guitar, and you can get like blues guitar sounds and really just some really nice sounds. I mean, that I would say really equal some of the Roland and Korg effects pedals that I've played with really easily. The amp sounds on there are really good. When you put it in a combi, like a 410 combi, which is a big Marshall stack, you really get that big kind of sound that's going on there.
So how does this compare to the real thing? I mean,
really, really, really well.
Really?
Really well. When you, put a couple of pedals in and switch, like I've got a Marshall amp here that's set in a 4x12. So effectively that would be a big sort of 4-foot cabinet with 4 12-inch speakers in it. And when you put that in, that's what it sounds like when you listen through the headphones. It sounds like that kind of sound. And the effects pedals are really good as well. And, you know, each one of them has like little adjustments on here, so you can adjust, you know, the level of tune you want, how much warmth you want in the distortion there, what level of distortion from, you know, full on thrash to maybe you just want just a little bit of overdrive. So it does compare really, really well. And the sounds, like I say, I mean, I've got a valve driven RP7 Digitech effects pedal, and I would say that the effects on this phone are better than that, than what comes from that effects pedal. So that's really good. You can buy loads of different things to extend this app out as well, and so that includes all kinds of different pedals, different effects and so on and so forth. So the guys that wrote this, they're really savvy in terms of how to make money, because all of these pedals you can buy them for like £2 or between £1 and £2. But it's also got what comes with the app is a single track recorder, which looks like a little tape deck. So you know, if I was to start that playing, then you know you can play like it looks like a little tape going around in there, and you can hear I've played a little bit of something in there, which you can't hear very well, but you know there's a little bit of something going on there.
I love the menus though, the way that's all like designed to look like the real thing. Yeah, to emulate the real thing.
The little, like the tapes with the little wheels going round. You know, that's
cool. A lot of care's gone into it, hasn't it? And it looks like it's paid off, you know.
You can invest in this then to turn this in. These blank slots that you can see here, they'll take another recorder. So now I can buy 2 or 3 or 4. So I can turn this into a 4-track recorder if I want to, and buy the extensions for that, which would allow me to lay down. I could use an effects pedal to lay out a bass track, put out a click track with a metronome, then put in a rhythm track over the top, drop in thing, and the iRig's got its own built-in microphone. so I can even sing into the microphone and create a little song and so on and so forth with it.
That's really cool.
So that's Amplitude. It works on the iPhone and on the iPad, and I think on the iPad it would be, you know, even cooler with the different interfaces and stuff that you've got on there. There is an investment to make, though. The iRig's about £40, something like that. You've got to buy that bit of hardware, first of all, and then buy the app that's about £5.99 or something like that. What I'm going to do, hopefully I'll have some time, what I'm going to try to do on this is I'm going to try to jam out some little seg riffs and little interlude riffs and stuff that I can bring along next time, and we will use them in the show for the introduction and the segues and so on and so forth.
That'd be awesome. Amplitude. Cool.
So yeah, Amplitude on the iPhone store. You need the iRig with it. Marks out of 10. I would say that gets definitely an 8 out of 10. Really good.
There's all this mean at the end of a gig now. You can't kick over your equipment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure I like that.
Jack. Do you know, that's that strap on that bumble girdle. Do you know, I've got to get that new one. Did you say it got a camera on it?
Oh, it does, but you've got the kid size one, that's the problem.
Not again.
You bought the Fisher Price girdle.
Well, I hope you recover from that one before next show, Rick.
Yeah, that's going to smart for sure. Yeah, that's going to be some chafing under the arms, I would have thought.
I can see the bumble girdle market is very much like the tablet market. You got to only go with the best. It's not worth taking any chances.
That certainly seems to be the case, doesn't it? It really does. Well, lots of things to talk about and lots of things to think about. We'd really like to get your feedback. Remember, you can send us podcast snippets and audio messages as well as emails. Send all that in to show@random.org. And remember, of course, by visiting the website, you can get access to some of the bonus material we've got there as well. So we decided that in this second session that we're going to start introducing a track, a music track that we'll play at the end. So this track is from a band that I used to be in a few years ago called Schmug, and the track is called Crazy. So we hope you enjoy this as we sign off.
Well, that's all from me.
And it's all from all of us.
Get me to a doctor, treat me. kiss me.